The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Welcome back into the Charlie Wiggins, Wendell Scott, Willie T. Ribs Memorial Garage for a brand new episode of Riding and Rolling. I am your host, Chris Stevens, and, well, yeah, it's been a minute, but I've spent most of 2017 writing, and doing more writing, but now it's time to get back to what we do best around here, and that's talk about the latest news and the newest rides in the automotive industry, as well as a look in the rearview mirror with the old school ride of the week. And before I go any further, Ryan and Roland is a proud, proud member of the Cold Slither Podcast Network, which has plenty of podcasts for you to choose from Beer It Is, to Crown and College, to Know the Score, to Rasslecast. The CSPN's got you covered. So check them all out at CSPN.us. And let's go ahead and get it started with Cruising Notes. This week's edition of Cruising Notes is brought to you by My Comic Shop. Go to CSPN.us, then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, click on the My Comic Shop banner to order from a vast selection of new releases, back issues, vintage classics, graphic novels, and more to be delivered right to your front door. My Comic Shop through CSPN.us. Do the damn thing today. All right, getting this started with millennials moving to the burbs and buying big SUVs. This comes from Keith Naughton over at the Bloomberg News Service. Everybody wants to know what millennials are doing these days, how they're doing it, and why they're doing it. To the surprise of no one, the auto industry is no different. And the reports are that millennials are the biggest segment of the home buying population. And with them starting families, they're going big with their vehicle of choice. U.S. industry sales of large SUVs have jumped 11% in the first half of 2017, thanks to an estimate from Ford Motor Company, compared with just 9%, well, actually, compared with increases of 9% for midsize and 4% for small utilities. We do see that demographic group driving larger sport utility sales as they acquire homes, create families, and gain some wealth, said Michelle Krebs, an analyst over at Auto Trader. They started with compact sport utilities, and now with families, they're moving up. LMC Automotive, an automotive research firm, is reporting that there will be a 16% increase in small and mid-sized SUV sales and a 25% jump in full-size SUV sales from now until 2022. Not really much of a surprise that despite the gloom and doom that is associated with young people, and you can blame the baby boomers for that, millennials are still hopeful of having that dream life of a house, two kids, and a car. Or two cars, or whatever. And back in the boomers' day, it was the station wagon. The generation after that, the minivan. And Generation X and millennials, it's been the SUV. So it's only natural that those young families stick with what's popular and what, you know, will best support and serve their family. And the SUV is really what's happening, along with crossovers and other niche vehicles, including one we will discuss in the Shop Talk segment, which is up after this. Next up, Hyundai going pickup? It is so. According to Wesley Wren over at Auto Week, hoping to reverse a sales slump, Hyundai is doing the obvious, building a truck. According to a recent interview with Reuters, the Vice President of Corporate and Product Planning for the United States brand, Michael J. O'Brien, says that Hyundai has greenlit development for a pickup similar to the 2015 Santa Cruz concept. If you haven't seen the Santa Cruz, you can Google it. It's kind of odd looking. Like, I wouldn't exactly, you know, consider it, you know, 21st century design fare. It's more like 22nd or 23rd or somebody's vision of what 22nd or 23rd century automotive engineering will be like, but we won't be around to find out. Either way, it looks like, apparently, it's, according to Auto Week, this is aimed at Honda's Ridgeline. And it's weird because we've extolled the virtues of the Ridgeline on this, the redesigned Ridgeline on this very program. Like, it's a very beautiful truck and it looks like it can handle a lot, but it really hasn't, you know, sold very well. There were only 2,586 Ridgeline sales in the United States in the month of July. For any car, that's bad showing. For a truck, downright terrible. Especially when you consider the fact that 10,000 Honda Pilots, the SUV, you know, were sold in July. So you're looking at a 4-to-1 ratio for the Pilot to the Ridgeline. So I don't know if Hyundai is going to really be entering a market that they can win in by, you know, creating a Santa Cruz, but only time will tell. But this is just, you know, the first of, you know, many SUVs to come from Hyundai. They will be they released a brand new compact SUV called the Kona, which is really nice and, you know, really nice looking. Has a nice spacious interior, you know, has off-road capability. You know, your standard, you know, crossover compact that, you know, is scheduled to compete with, you know, the Buick Enclave and the, what's the other one I'm thinking of? The Jeep Compass, yes. And there will be a Santa Fe Sport and a Santa Fe replacement and a Hyundai Tucson before 2020. So Hyundai is really gaining, gaining on the market and, you know, cashing all their chips to the table on the SUV market, including with their brand new luxury Genesis brand, which is like their answer to Toyota's Lexus, Hyundai's answer to Acura, and so on and so on and so forth. So hopefully for Hyundai's sake, this will pay off. The Santa Cruz truck we gamble will pay off. Doesn't seem likely, but you never know what will happen in the industry these days. And last but certainly not least, Hagerty Classic Car Insurance has launched a classic car rental service. This comes from Colin Woodard over at MotorTrend.com. Car sharing is a new way for people that, you know, who don't have cars or just want to run for a couple hours to, you know, run errands and different things like that. And Hagerty Classic Car Insurance is now offering a new service where classic car owners can rent out their prize rides to people who've always wanted to drive one. The rental service is called DriveShare, but it's actually the Classics and Exotics brand they recently purchased, and it isn't zip car cheap, but it's still super exciting. DriveShare gives people an easy way to get behind the wheel of the cars they've always wanted to drive, said McKeel Hagerty, CEO of Hagerty. Our goal is to provide a common platform that connects enthusiasts and owners to expand a community of people who love cars. I started this company so people could try out these amazing vehicles and owners could make a little money to defray the cost of ownership, and that's still the mission today for DriveShare, said Peter Zawadzki, the founder of Classics and Exotics and the current director of DriveShare. It's a great way to bring more people into the hobby. What we've seen is the people who rent these cars often become classic car owners themselves. But like I said, this ain't cheap. DriveShare, you know, has announced there will be an application process, a $500 security deposit, and you have to be at least 30 or older to be approved. And Hagerty also provides up to $1 million in insurance coverage to ease the owner of the car's minds. And if there's an issue with the car, Hagerty will provide 24/7 roadside assistance from people who guarantee they know and care about classic cars. It's just available in Los Angeles right now, so it's not exactly, you know, worldwide yet, but it sounds like Hagerty and DriveShare really wants to take it worldwide, so if you're interested, you can go to DriveShare.com to go and check it out. And we will be back with our Shop Talk segment.
Many a day has passed, the night has gone by, but still I find the time to put that bomb off in your eye. Total chaos for these playoffs, thought we was absent. We're taking another route to represent the Dungeon family like Grey Day. Me and my nigga decide to take the back way. We stabbing every city, then we headed to that back cave. ATL, Georgia, what do we do? Fall ya. Bulldog and hoes like them Georgetown Hawkers. Boy, you signed the silly thing, my room is sitting pretty, doing donuts while you suckers like them circles around titties. Damn, we the committee, gon' burn it down, but us gon' bust you in the mouth with the chorus now. Say,
we begged, we pleaded, we threatened, But apparently, only a worldwide diesel fuel cheating scandal can make Volkswagen do what VW fans have been asking for close to 20 years now, and that's give us a brand new microbus. In need of a serious makeup presence in the people's car world and the automotive industry in general, Volkswagen announced over the weekend that a new microbus based on this year's ID Buzz concept will drop worldwide in 2022. Now, 5 years is a ways off, and things can change quickly in the industry, as they often do. But Volkswagen needs this worse than R. Kelly needs to be under the jail, and I'll tell you why. While still holding on in his homeland of Germany, Volkswagen desperately needs to act of goodwill around the world after the diesel emissions cheating scandal that cost them billions of dollars worldwide and a ruined reputation. People forget that Volkswagen started off as, you know, a tool of Hitler's Nazi Germany. Strangely enough, that's come back around in today's world, but that's another story for another time. And after World War II, when Volkswagen brought the Beetle over, nobody really gave a damn because, once again, you know, back then people actually hated Nazis. Funny how that works. But eventually people warmed to the weird little Beetle and then the cars that came after it, including the original microbus, which we already covered on the Old School Ride of the Week on this very podcast. But they desperately need this microbus for a couple of reasons other than the one I just mentioned. It's a good way to get back into good graces of the automotive industry and customers by, one, bringing back a warm and fuzzy feeling in a brand that's been ongoing for 50-plus years and counting with the microbus, and, two, you're making an electric vehicle? That's a license to print money, man. In today's world, when everybody's going green despite the best efforts of the current regime in office, you know, electric cars are sprouting up all over the place. An electric microbus I don't even know what decade you would call it, the 2020s. I guess we just call it the 2020s. In the 2020s, that is, like I said, it's a license to print money. VW covered that on both counts with this past weekend's announcement. It's a step in the right direction for such a popular brand that needs, you know, to get back to where they once were before everyone found out they were cheating, you know, on the gas prices. So, and we've already covered why the original microbus is such a popular vehicle in counterculture and folklore. So there's a sense that the ad campaign for the new one, when it comes out, could be as cheeky and quirky as fun as the original ads that was run by Dool, Dane, and Birnbach for VW in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. From a competitive standpoint, the new microbus would give Ford Transit Connect a real run for the money, as well as the Chrysler Pacifica luxury minivan, the Ram panel vans, and GM really doesn't have a minivan, you know, to speak of. The Express, the full-size Express, which replaced the G20 back in 1995, if you can believe it or not, is still going. I'm surprised. Who's buying those? Anybody? Anybody know? Because I have not seen a soccer mom family, a camping family, driving around a brand new Chevy Express in probably the last 5 or 10 years. So that would give GM some, you know, that might give GM some incentive to step its microvan? I probably keep saying microvan because I'm thinking about the microbus and I really mean to say minivan. There we go. So this would force GM to rethink its lack of a minivan. There we go. In the grand scheme of things, you have to give people what they want at some point. And Volkswagen realizes they really have to win back the faith, confidence, and love of their customers, as well as the respect of the automotive world. The reborn electric microbus is a huge, huge step in the right direction for the company.
See, it ain't just a car. It ain't just a wheel. It's a time machine. It's a spaceship. It's precious. You gotta take your time. You can't be rubbing on them curves, hitting them potholes. You gotta ride clean and ride slow. Me and my
old.
50 years ago this month, the Japanese automotive industry got a big boost from a compact car that would change the way the engineering of our homies from the land of the rising sun would be viewed forever. The Datsun 510, known as the Bluebird in Japan, would become a success, an auto racing legend, and one of the first Japanese imports to really go toe-to-toe with other imports and homegrown compact cars here in the United States. The 510 was a continuation of a number trend that started with the Datsun 110 compact in 1955, and Datsun, of course now known as Nissan, and Toyota were the only Japanese imports in the U.S. at the time, so they were pretty much battling each other in the 50s and 60s for that racist but hella frugal American dollar. That, of course, didn't involve VW, BMW, or Mercedes-Benz. When Toyota's new Corona gained critical acclaim in the States in 1965, Datsun decided to go back to the drawing board and update the 410 edition of the 10 series with the 510. Credit goes to the engineering and design duo of chief engineer Noboru Ota and Teruo Ochino, who combined their resources and innovation to create an advanced little car. Ota created an overhand cannon engine series known as the L series and four-wheel independent suspension, absolutely unheard of for any Japanese car back in that time. That was made of McPherson struts up front and a semi-trailing arm out the back that only European sports cars had. So the 510's mechanics made a very pleasant car to handle and drive, and we'll get more into that in a second. Uchino's design was based largely off the BMW 2002, but was a Datsun through and through, and the 410 had like this slightly sagging tail. It's kind of like a dumpy butt, but Uchino straightened it up and sat it upright, and vent windows were really popular back then. If you don't know what that is, it's like one of the little quarter windows. If you ever seen an old car, it's a quarter window on either the it's on both the driver's side and the passenger side that you can shove open. But instead, they decided to just go with one large pane of glass, which of course is what we all have now in cars. It's something we take for granted these days. But back then, that was pretty unique to the late 60s and Japanese imports in general. You combine that with a less than $2,000 price tag and the options of a two-door coupe, four-door sedan, and a station wagon, the 510 was a hit from the time it hit the showroom on August 15, 1967, until its final U.S. days in the summer of 1972, and it remains a very popular car among Japanese enthusiasts, as well as the mini hot rod set, who love to tinker with the engines and soup up their 510s to speed by just about anybody. The 510 is also held in high self-esteem in the racing community, where in the 70s it won everything from the East African Safari Rally to the SCCA Trans Am 2.5 Challenge, which inspired two documentaries, 500 Kilometers to Victory and Against All Odds, about the little 510. The 510 showed Toyota, as well as Honda, Mitsubishi, and Subaru, who would of course come over and dominate the 70s and the 80s, that if you create something innovative and fresh and present it to American customers the right way, you could definitely take them away from their beloved Detroit Steel. And that's why they still own the United States market to this day. Because they figured out that if you make small, cheap, inexpensive cars that will get you from point A to point B and beyond, then you'll make a whole lot of money. And that's all because of the Datsun 510. And that's going to do it for this week's edition of Riding and Rolling. Greatly appreciate y'all stopping by the garage this week. Check us out whenever on SoundCloud.com/ Riding and Rolling Pod, as well as our CSPN.us page. If you want to holler at us, shoot us an email at RidingandRolling@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Riding and Rolling. That's RidingandRolling. That's all one word. So until next time, y'all be safe and be good.